Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed, "I found nirvana! I win!" They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
David Spangler is a PhD. He is the founder and principal of Work and Think LLC. He is helping clients make complex decisions that include a realistic understanding of uncertainty. He's a keynote speaker, a corporate consultant, a researcher, and an author. His newest book is Reasoning for Business, The Inquirer's Guide to Decision Making. Welcome to the show, Haywood.
Great. Thanks for having me here. I appreciate it. Great to meet you today.
Excited to have you on. Tell us a little bit about your personal lives, more about your work, and what motivated you to write the book.
Absolutely. Well, I love to travel, and I travel quite a bit for work, but I like to travel just on my own time, and I like climbing and hiking. So I guess my most adventurous climb was I tried glacier climbing in Alaska. That was 4 years ago. I was definitely novice, and I'm still a novice, but that's not the norm for me. I'm not usually that adventurous, so that's probably a high point. But when I travel now, even for work, I like to try to make urban hikes or find, recently I was in suburban Chicago and I found a botanical garden. So wherever I go, especially as we get into longer days, I try to find some way to be outside doing some sort of a hike after work. And I do travel quite a bit for different clients, and some of it is to deliver the keynotes you mentioned. Sometimes I deliver trainings on critical thinking. Often I facilitate offsites that are focused on strategic planning. And then I'm sometimes home, which is where I am right now. And I do research for different organizations, and I have a few coaching clients. They typically call me their thought partner, but that's pretty much the scope of my work. But I'd say in any given month, I'm on the road about 2 weeks out of the month. And the book, great question. What inspired me to write it? Really, 12 years of working with different clients and seeing the questions they had, and I guess really seeing the sources that they wanted to go to for expert advice, and thinking about the places they go for advice really helped me organize this book. So I would see them sort of struggle to make sense out of the advice. Sometimes the advice was too simplistic. They tried to follow it. They didn't get the results that the author said they would get. So I really wanted to create a guidebook that would help people navigate. I call it the advice universe. So that's really what prompted me to write this book. And the concepts do come from my academic background. I have a PhD in philosophy, and I don't want to scare anybody off. It's, I hope, a very accessible book. But part of my impulse was to take some concepts you might not know from philosophy. They're very relevant to help you navigate this advice universe. So that's what inspired me. I'm really excited that it's out, and I'm really happy to be able to share these ideas with people.
Yeah, excellent. So when people ask you what you do, what do you tell them?
Well, a lot of times I will use a joke which might be cliche, but somebody who mentored me in becoming a consultant told me what consultants do is they look at your watch and tell you what time it is. So a lot of times this is an upfront joke, and it might sound corny, but I do feel like often that's what consultants do. People will invite you in. Maybe you've done some research and you need to deliver some news, which is a challenging, and they want an outside person to deliver that news. And sometimes they do want to, you know, hurt the messenger. And, you know, that's part of the role. That's okay, because they can work together. But often it is really helping people clarify their own thought, where they want to go, reflecting back to them what I hear them say, so that they get a clearer idea of what they want to do, whether that's individually, again, as somebody that I'm thought partnering with, or with a group. Just an example from this past summer is I did strategic planning with the IT department of a large food manufacturer. And really my role is to help them get clarity about what they needed to do with AI and different changes in the workforce that they were facing. So the joke probably is a little bit true. It is kind of looking at where people are and reflecting back to them what you see and letting them say, yeah, that is accurate. That is where we are. Or they can say, that's not where we are. And my response is, well, how can I help you get clarity?
Clarity is certainly of value. Is it more important than ever?
I think yes. Again, partially because there's so much, as I said, I call it the advice universe, but there's so much in public discourse. There's so much produced in popular science, that I think it is very important to be able to distill not just what's credible, but also what's relevant and what you need to know to solve a particular problem. And I facilitated some sort of critical thinking for at least 14 years now. And I really have seen people. I guess I'll use the word evolve. Evolve in their ability to spot what's misinformation, what's disinformation. People are very astute at that. And part of what I wanted to do with the book is give people the next set of skills, which is once you determine what is credible, that's still a whole lot of information. And being able to figure out what evidence do you need to make your decisions, what's relevant, what's true, but you don't need to know it right now. I think for a lot of people, that's what brings clarity. They're very good at distilling what's noise, what's fake. But even once you do that, there's still a huge body of information that you need to be able to zero in on and figure out what's really useful for me in my specific situation.
It's not obvious. We make so many decisions every day. We probably make thousands of decisions. In fact, I'm just thinking, I think I've read somewhere we make around 35,000 decisions every day. And so I'm probably not thinking about how well I'm doing that. Are people thoughtful of that? And if I did become better at it, what do I stand to gain?
Well, I think part of my response is just to acknowledge that we do make many small decisions throughout the day. And I would say, this is just my opinion or editorial comment, a challenge today is we're faced with too many small decisions that by the end of the day, we hit decision fatigue from as simple as what kind of bag do you want or what do you want in your coffee. All day long, we make these small decisions. And I've talked to clients and certainly friends who will say, I just feel worn out by the end of the day with all of these small decisions. And I think being able to pay less attention to the small decisions so that you have the mental energy and acumen for the big decisions is really important. And not every day is full of big decisions. There are ways, I guess, you could kind of streamline the smaller decisions. So this is just a for instance from my own life, but I eat pretty much the same breakfast every day, and I have for my whole adult life that I can remember. I have peanut butter waffles and veggie links, and I never deviate unless I travel. And one reason I do that is I don't want to think about breakfast because I'm going to have some bigger decisions to make. So I just get all those small decisions off. That's what I do every morning. So I think in a very kind of strategic way, people could think about how to simplify some of the smaller decisions. And then when you face a bigger decision, you're more adept and you have literally more energy for it. I mean, there's been research about decision fatigue. Remember the first articles I read about it were probably back to 2012. And that's just what we feel at the end of the day from so many small decisions. What I really try to help people.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found Nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
I guess focus on, but even realize they're facing, or I would say true dilemmas. And that's another thing that I write about in the book. And a dilemma, I think sometimes, again, people have this idea the dilemma is sometimes the lesser of two evils. And a lot of people know this famous psychological experiment, the trolley car experiment. And you're driving the trolley car and there's a fork in the track, but whichever fork you choose, there's going to be a bad outcome. Somebody's tied to the track on one side and you're going to run over them, or there's a crowd on the track. And it really, that's a thought experiment that's designed to get you to think about choosing between the lesser of two evils. But often the dilemmas I think people find challenging are choosing between two good things. A dilemma I've encountered several times with clients is essentially career path. One person I've worked with, whom I use as an example in the book, was a researcher at a public health institution here in the United States. And he had the offer to go into private industry, big pharma. And that was a dilemma for him. One would pay more, but he wasn't sure that the pharma job would allow him to work in public health, which had been his original goal. So that's not the lesser of two evils. That's choosing between two goods. And I think often that's more what people face is, how do I really figure out, how do my values inform this choice between goods, not so much the lesser of two evils? And moving those small micro decisions out of the way to free you up for those big choices, I think is part of what I try to help people do.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And it's true, I don't have unlimited bandwidth. I have less by the day, it seems. So protecting my attention and my ability to make better decisions around really important things is better than making a agonizing decision over what I'm going to have for breakfast or what I'm going to wear today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's another great thing to take off your to-do list. What am I going to wear? I own so many plaid shirts, so there's no choice. Anyway.
Well, and you know, it's obviously the Steve Jobs thing is probably the most famous example of that. We've probably never seen Steve Jobs in something other than a black turtleneck. So
true, absolutely.
How are you grappling with and thinking about artificial intelligence and critical thinking?
Well, I think I've thought about it a lot, and it came up through, I guess, a few different opportunities with clients. So one opportunity was a client that's a consultant, a large consulting company, and they invited me to give some brown bag lunches to really talk about the ethics of AI, and particularly when AI achieves this potential it has to self-teach and self-direct and not need any human supervision. And I was actually just rereading last night about the need for human supervision to check in on what AI is doing and leave ultimate decision-making authority with AI. So I've given a lot of thought to if AI can develop to that self-directed level, should it? And to me, that's an ethical question. One insight I had from working with this consulting company is, for me, and I talk about this, I actually just recently published an article on it. Biomedical ethics, I think, could be a really useful framework for AI ethics. Biomedical ethics started 60 years ago. And at the time, the kind of emerging but alarming new technologies were life support, in vitro fertilization. And bioethics has developed a framework for how do we use those technologies to promote human flourishing. And I think that could be a similar framework. So part of my response to AI is always come back to, how can we use it as a tool to promote human flourishing? I think that's a really important thing. But as far as critical thinking, just another professional example, one of my thought partners who was, as we worked together, he was promoted into the C-suite. His company developed their own proprietary AI, and this was 2 years ago, I guess, or going on 3 years ago. No, it was 2024. And they were being trained, everybody was being trained to use the AI, and they were being trained according to their job function. But what he told me was there was no critical thinking training to go along with the AI. So basically people, I'm oversimplifying a bit, but they were being sort of acculturated to just use the AI and use the results that AI provided at face value. And I think for where we are now, you can't do that. So if you use AI, a lot of people use it, I would say, as a research assistant, but you still have to use your own critical thinking skills when it gives you an answer. You've got to test it. You've got to look for some counterfactual information. If you use an AI tool that takes you to the links for the original sources, go to those original sources. So just using what it serves you at face value, I think immediately is the bigger challenge. And you've got to exercise critical thinking. You can't just accept the answer it gives you. And I guess the last thing I'll say, which I think about a lot, I apologize, it might sound kind of soapboxy, but I think when AI really came to the fore beginning in 2023, I talked again to clients, but also just people I know who, some of whom were really excited. They had this impression that in some ways AI could start to think for them and make their own decisions. And they were excited about that. And maybe this goes back to what we were just talking about. They were, worn out with decision fatigue. But my basic question to them was, and would still be, our ability to think and make decisions is part of what makes us human. And why do you want to give that up and delegate it? Or I would also kind of ask sarcastically, all the time you save when you're not making big personal decisions, what are you going to be doing with it? Because, thinking and making decisions to me is part of what we do as humans. So that last comment, maybe I hope it didn't sound too soapboxish, but I do try to push people on thinking, why do you want to kind of abdicate some of your decision-making responsibility? So you tell me. I know you're interviewing me, but tell me, did that sound too soapboxy? I
No,
hope
not at
not.
all. I
So.
think that sounds really reasonable to me. If and I wrote down that if you desire offloading your thinking and your decision making, that's maybe evidence that you're just burned out. And instead of trying to get rid of that part of your life, which makes you very human and is very important, maybe try and eliminate some of your other responsibilities and hold on to the critical thinking piece.
Yes, very well said. I think that's excellent. Yeah, the solution is not get rid of critical thinking. The solution is maybe get rid of some of those smaller decisions like we were talking
How
about.
do you feel about peanut butter waffles and plaid shirts?
I love them. I'm so used to them, and probably if
Saying that
that's it. I don't have to think about it. So
that's what that guy needs to start doing instead of trying to get AI to make it decisions for him. Just
yes.
anyway.
I don't ask AI, should I keep eating peanut butter waffles? I'll say
No, because what
that.
happens if it says you should stop? Be like,
Yeah,
no, AI, no,
that
thank you. No, thank you. You keep your opinions to yourself. What relationship does intelligence have with good decision making?
Well, that's, I get versions of that question. More often, the question is, can you teach critical thinking? And I guess you have a different question. And I guess my short answer is, I don't think they're directly related. So whenever I'm going to talk about critical thinking or propose to teach critical thinking, I like to assure people it's a set of skills. It's not about your IQ. It's not innate. And I think decision making is the same. We all have a decision making capacity. Part of what I like to emphasize is we all have personal judgments, and there's a lot of cognitive psychology and neuroscience, and probably you're very familiar with it. Your listeners are very familiar with it. And the difference between when we make an intuitive or gut judgment and when we're making a reasoned decision, but we all have the capacity for reason. And I guess my short answer is it's not about intelligence. I don't think there's any evidence to suggest you have to have a certain level or even a certain educational level to be able to make the decisions. And one real world example that I haven't thought of for a while, but a woman I knew very early in my career, she and her husband ran a commercial farm. They were very successful, but she had stopped at high school. But she was one of the most self-aware, astute people that I've ever met. And she was a great business person, but also a great person. So I think she's a great example of you don't have to necessarily go to college or get an MBA to be a good decision maker and a really astute business person and human being.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
You said gut a minute ago, and I wanted to ask you about that. What role ought that play or ought not play in making good decisions?
Well, I think part of my answer would be it automatically plays a role. So when I talk about gut, and I use the term intuition as a synonym, The brain theory that I subscribe to, that's based on a lot of research, is whenever we're in a situation, part of our brain is automatically going to supply us with what we experience as a gut or an intuitive judgment. So most of us, we see certain situations over the course of our lives. When we get into a middle age, we've seen a lot, and decisions do tend to fall into patterns. And so when we're in a new situation, sometimes we really haven't seen it before, but most often we've been in a similar situation. So the gut or intuitive judgment is what our brain very quickly supplies us with from our previous experience. It's the interpretation of what's going on here. And it's usually the solution of here's what we should do. So I would say, I don't know that we have a choice about that gut reaction. It's part of how our brain works. You might have heard the term rules of thumb, or the technical term in psychology is heuristics. So when we're in a situation, we've probably seen it before, our brain very quickly supplies us with these rules of thumb or heuristics. Here's what's going on. Here's what to do. But the analogy I use is you can hit the pause button. You don't have to respond with that intuitive or gut response. And I think it's useful to hit the pause button. This is what I talk about with, a thought partner, or if I'm giving a keynote or teaching a critical thinking class. Be aware of what these rules of thumb are, and really ask yourself, is the situation in front of me, is it really like the one I've seen before? I know at first glance it does seem familiar, and I know how I approached a similar situation last time, but is this situation really like the one I've seen before? And do my rules of thumb fit here, or are they going to lead me to too simple an answer or to misread the situation? And certainly our rules of thumb sometimes can morph into a cognitive bias, which is just a mental shortcut to reduce uncertainty. So I think I would say our gut response is automatic, but acting on it is not automatic. It's a choice, a specific pause. Let me reflect on what this gut judgment is. Maybe it's aligned with the situation. Maybe it's not. When it's not particularly, that's when your ability to figure, do research, get some more data, draw conclusions. That's when those critical thinking skills are really important.
Makes sense. How often do you make bad or dumb decisions, Heywood?
Oh, wow. I guess that's, again, back to the waffles and the shirt. I try to eliminate those decisions. It's a good question. And I guess I would answer that, but I encourage you and other folks, maybe not categorize decisions as bad or dumb. I mean, there certainly can be some bad and dumb decisions, but I would say they're decisions that I've made that, in retrospect, had I known more, I would have made differently. So I certainly look back and think, even some career choices, some paths I went down that I just realized were not the right path for me. I would say if I'd known more at the time, I would have done something different. But often, or even, I only in my career had one occasion to fire somebody. This may not be a great example, but it was for cause. So the person had issues. But I always go back and think, from the very beginning, could I have set up our performance reviews, our performance plans more deliberately? So I think I certainly reflect on decisions and how I could have made them differently and lessons learned. And I guess I would encourage people not to think of bad. And what's a dumb decision? When I was young, I was in the sun too much. So now I go to the dermatologist a lot. That was dumb. And I knew at the time that there were risks. So certainly there are some decisions I would say were dumb. More decisions I would say, in retrospect, would I do them over? Yes. And I would focus on the lesson learned that I can bring forward.
I'm curious if there are a really common error for lack, and I don't mean to put judgment on this, not necessarily making a bad decision or a dumb decision, but if I make a suboptimal decision, is it commonly because of something like time horizon? I'm thinking too short term, or it's risk related. Are there different categories?
There are. I think it often depends. Sometimes, well, one challenge people often have with decisions that lead to, and I think you have a good term, a suboptimal decision, is just basically decision avoidance. So this is another thing psychologists have studied a lot. And, we might postpone a decision, and there's a term, it's a psychological term, but when I share it with people, they find it really useful. It's anticipatory regret. So we're afraid of how we'll feel if we make the wrong choice, and therefore we postpone the choice. But if you're not choosing, kind of ironically, de facto, something's happening. So not choosing is still choosing. So I think often where people end up with a decision that they do regret that's suboptimal, it might be because they tried to postpone the decision and they allowed something to happen. And when people are struggling with anxiety about a decision, I always encourage them to, if you make the choice, at least you're trying to be in charge of your choice and in some ways to determine what happens next. Whereas if you avoid the decision, you really are being passive and just letting something happen. So I try to get people to see the fear of making the wrong choice maybe shouldn't be as strong as the consequence if you don't make any choice. Because even if you make a less than optimal choice, you can still say to yourself, I made the best decision I could with the knowledge I had at the time. And with most decisions, you know, we can recalibrate. So I think getting people to want to overcome that anxiety and to make the decision at all is often the bigger challenge. Letting things happen rather than you proactively trying to make certain things happen is where I see people run into some challenges.
Well, that certainly makes a lot of sense. I know that I've been guilty of this in the past of ruminating on things and replaying things over and over again in my mind and trying to look at it from every single angle. It strikes me that if I go through a thorough process and a good critical thinking decision tree, or however it is that you like to think about that and talk about it, that it doesn't absolve me of that later, but I could say, hey, at least I tried to make the best possible decision.
I think that's a great insight. And I guess that's how I approach decision-making myself and how I would encourage other people is you might still feel you would have made the decision differently, but you can have the satisfaction of knowing that you engaged thoroughly in deliberation and you made the best decision you could, again, given what you knew at the time. And I think it does help. Part of what you described, the ruminating, sometimes is called post-decisional regret. And that's an unpleasant psychological experience. I will say, as an aside, a good friend of mine who's a clinical psychologist has helped me see if anybody has anxiety problems, sometimes they really fall into two categories. There's regret or there's anticipatory regret of, oh my gosh, what's going to go wrong next? So candidly, I have more of the second, like, uh-oh, what ifs? I'm plagued by what ifs. But if a bigger challenge is regret, then I do think being able to say to yourself, I made the best decision I could. I faced it squarely. I made my existential choice. I didn't try to shy away from it. I think that can bring you a lot of satisfaction, even though you might say, I would do it differently if I could do it over again.
Excellent.
And if you don't have anticipatory anxiety where you're thinking about the next what if, I commend you. It's not a pleasant experience. But if anybody does, you know, you'll drive yourself crazy not thinking, why didn't I do such and such? But oh my gosh, what's about to happen to me next?
Appreciate that. Well, Heywood, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage you with you? Where can they get their copy of Reasoning for Business, the Inquirer's Guide to Decision Making?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn, Heywood Spangler. I also have a website. It's just www.myname.heywoodspangler.com. The book is published by Routledge, so you can go to the Routledge site. It's also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Those are the main sites. I'll be honest, I recently Googled the book, and there's some bookstores even in New Zealand carrying a copy of it. So that's very gratifying, but you don't have to find the bookstore in New Zealand. I think Routledge, Amazon, and Barnes & Noble are the three places, and LinkedIn and my website are great ways to stay in touch. So thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. And thank you for great questions.
It was a pleasure talking. And it's not like HeywoodSpangler.net, because there's only one, I bet. Is there only one Heywood Spangler, Heywood?
There's, as far as I know, there's only one of me. So yes. Yep. Yep. I don't think you're going to get any other Heywood Spangler websites out there.
Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Heywood your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Find Heywood on LinkedIn, Heywood Spangler. Find him at heywoodspangler.com, and then pick up your copy of Reasoning for Business, either in New Zealand or Routledge or Amazon. And I will link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Heywood.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.